Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's Flames Talk on a Wednesday, June 4th. Thanks for being along with us on this Wednesday. Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you on this Wednesday, June 4th, with the text line open at 960-960. Welcome aboard. So, as we got this segment going,
are we sure?
The microphone broke. So
is this... I don't even know where the other piece went.
Me neither. So we'll just need to get engineering involved in that.
I think I got covered in some sort of ink. Does that make sense? It's a microphone.
Oh, no, it's a white shirt.
Yeah.
Too. Ugh. Well.
Send Art the bill. It's fine.
Hopefully engineering can kind of help us out here in the next little bit. That was bizarre. Hi, Vix.
And, hey, buddy.
So I wanted to, as we get this segment going, wanted to... I guess really focus in on something that we heard on Tuesday's show. So here we are, June 27th, June 28th is the NHL draft, which means we're just over 3 weeks away from this year's NHL draft. We'll have full coverage for you here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, as per usual, including Vickers and FC Hockey giving us our prospect grade, so on and so forth. But right now, Flames are slated to pick three times in the top 60. They've got 18th overall from New Jersey, either 31st or 32nd overall from Florida, and then they've got 54th overall in the second round as well. But is that where they ultimately end up picking? And this is the conversation I wanted to get into, because we've talked about the Flames moving up. We've talked about the Flames moving up a few picks from number 18. If there was somebody kind of in that next tier that they really, really wanted to get their hands on. But what about even further? Like, what about a really significant move up the draft order? And the reason I asked that question is because this is what Frank Saravalli told us on Flames Talk on Tuesday's program, as Frank was talking about the NHL draft.
I think there's a real chance that we see one and or multiple of the top five picks traded. And I think the Flames, you know, a bit further down the draft board are going to be considering a lot of the same thoughts.
And it's a quick little 15-second clip from Frank, but you're like, what? Now, Frank pinpointed two teams in the top five that could be interesting names to go after, or interesting teams to go after when it comes to their first pick. Chicago and Utah were the two teams that he highlighted.
Right.
Utah picks fourth, Chicago picks third. I'm still skeptical, like, as even when you hear it from a guy like Frank Saravalli, I'm still skeptical that a team like the Flames moving from 18 into the top five could happen, because it so seldom happens. It next to never happens like that in this league anymore, especially
right
in the cap area, cap era, and especially that far. Like, that would be a 14 or 15 pick move for the Flames. It happens so rarely, if ever at all. So I am still skeptical about it, but when you hear a guy like Frank say it, it starts to make you think for sure.
Well, and I would go so far as, this is no insider information here, but I could see the scenario where even the Nashville Predators are amenable to moving the number five pick, because you look what they did last offseason in bringing in Stamkos, Marchessault, and Shea, and ending up with the fifth overall pick. I could imagine Barry Trotz, a young GM, wanting to make his mark a little bit more and wanting a more competitive team, moving that pick for a little bit more immediate help. But to your point, it's not something we see every year. It's not something we see every second year. Very rarely do you see a number three, a number four, a number five pick moved. And when it is, it's not as though you see that team end up dropping a dozen spots or 15 spots, whatever the scenario would take for the Calgary Flames to move up. So yeah. I understand your trepidation. At the same time, I can see why Nashville would do it. I could see, with Connor Bedard eligible for an extension and how things have gone or haven't gone in Chicago in his first couple of seasons, the motivation there. And then you look at Utah as well, entering their second season really in a new market as a quote-unquote new organization, wanting to make their mark in their own market by participating in the playoffs for the first time. I can understand those three teams in particular making a move where they get more immediate help as opposed to using that selection and then having to wait, you know, whether it's 1 year, two years, three years for that player that they selected to make an impact when those three teams in particular, I feel, have designs of making the playoffs next season.
Yeah.
Not Chicago per se, but better vibes for the Blackhawks knowing that Connor Bedard has an option to go short term or long term on his next deal.
Yeah. And I definitely think, well, we got it fixed. We got the mic fixed.
I don't know. You tell me.
That sounds wonderful. Look at.
I am terrified to move it.
Shan Virgie for the win. Yeah, maybe just leave it like that or gently move it going forward. But Shan Virgie with a very, very clutch fix.
Now, was I outstanding? Do you think I was punked or anything like that? Because that came down pretty quickly.
I don't think so. I think it was just really loose. Right. I think that was just really loose. I'm glad we were able to fix it. Does it, and this is something that Frank brought up. Does the fact that we're hearing whispers of Chicago or Utah, you bring up Nashville, people are talking about this around the league, not just connected to the Flames. Obviously, we're doing a show called Flames Talk. I'm curious as to where you are on the text line at 960-960. If moving up into this year's top five is something you'd really be interested in seeing the Flames do. But, you know, something that Frank brought up was, hey, is this maybe more of an indictment on the type of players that'll be available in this year's top five? Is this, are teams willing to move out of those spots because there's, in their eyes, not an impact enough player, not a potential franchise player that they'll be selecting there? I'm curious as to your feel on that. Like, why are we hearing it more this year than in other years when it comes to teams in that top five?
I'm going to go back and lean more on the desperation of those organizations as opposed to the quality of prospect. I will say the fact that you're not likely to get a guy that's NHL ready or ready to make contributions at the NHL level immediately might spark some of that hesitation or might fuel some of that willingness to move the picks. But if you look at the last number threes, Beckett Sanicki, Adam Fantilli, Logan Cooley, the last number three, number fours, Caden Lindstrom, Will Smith, Shane Wright. The last number fives, Ivan Demidov, David Reinbacher, and Cutter Gauthier. The 3-4-5 that I've kind of got in my mind and what we have at FC Hockey is Hagans, Desnoyer, and Porter Martone. And I would put them in about the 50% range in terms of those nine names I just mentioned in the past three, fours, and fives. Like, they're right in that mix. There's conversations for Hagans to be, you know, second in that group of four or third in that group of four, maybe not number one. Like, maybe you're not looking at him over an Adam Fantilli, for example. But you look at Desnoyer. Desnoyer is a guy that I'm more excited about this year than Caden Lindstrom a year ago. Maybe not so much about Will Smith because Will Smith has that, you know, first line dynamic offensive upside. But then you go to number five. Okay, well, maybe you're not taking Martone over Demidov, but there would be a real argument over Cutter Gauthier. And certainly one over David Reinbacher, who's still very much a question because he lost a year of development due to injury, selected by the Montreal Canadiens. But I don't think it's so much a dissatisfaction with what would be available 3-5. If we were talking 6-10, I could see that perhaps a little bit more. But I don't know from my perspective that I'd be moving this pick solely based on the personnel I could select with.
So that being said, and I know that you're a big fan of Desnoyer.
Yes.
And he's a guy who probably ends up going somewhere in that top five. We know how much the Flames are in need of drafting a potential next center iceman is. And we'll get to the price and what it might cost in a second, but is paying the price like from you? And we'll lean on you at FC Hockey and your knowledge of this year's draft, which is definitely stronger than mine.
Thank you.
Significantly so. Is the type of player that you could get worth the price that it would cost for you to move up that far?
This is a tough one. I look at where the Flames are now and the type of assets it would take. Like, I feel like even just parking the top five talk, if you wanted to get to the top 10, I don't think your number 18 and your 31 or 32 get you into the top 10 as is. So to get into the top five, you're talking about adding another young NHL asset as it stands right now, and another quality player that's able to fit into a top six or a top four role on the blue line for whichever organization. Because again, you're looking at the organization that is going to be willing to make the move. The three that we've sort of identified and the two Frank identified are more win now-ish. And so can you put together a package that improves Utah, for example, enough to the point where they're willing to give up a top five pick? And I look, and maybe it's the optimistic in me, but I look at, okay, at 18, you're not guaranteed to get a top line center, but you're very likely to get a guy who's mid, I don't want to say like bottom floor, but mid floor could be a second liner with an outside shot of being a first. Now, it's not going to be an impact guy like a Desnoyer or a Higgins. And Michael Misa, we kind of just sort of excused him out of this. I don't necessarily see him falling past number two.
Right.
So that's why I'm not bringing him up so in this conversation.
So you're kind of considering Schaefer and Misa will be the top two
picks.
Yeah,
that's where I am on that. So the acquisition cost for a team that's in a retool or rebuild, whatever it wants, you're asking them to give up what's probably going to be a 25 and under roster player now, two first round picks, and another asset on top of that. To me, I don't know if that necessarily fits the retool, but if my head scout, my chief scout, and my scouting staff go, hey, Desnoyer, we think that this is the guy that can lead us in the similar way that Patrice Bergeron led the Boston Bruins, because that's one of the comparables.
Okay.
Barkov is kind of a comparable. I don't want to say the low end because I feel this is rude, but one of the other likely scenarios is a Sean Couturier type who was a top five pick as well. If your scouting staff believes that this is the guy, then I believe in my scouting
staff.
Man,
if you could... Sean Couturier, at his kind of peak when he was in that Selke trophy conversation year in, year out, I don't even know. The best the Flames have had that's even come close to that, they had Lanco, they had Lindholm. I mean, really, even that would be a really large step up in terms of what they've had down the middle.
Well, and I say this and not to be disparaging because he's had a fantastic career with the Calgary Flames, but you expend those assets and you get a Michael Backlund type who's, you know, going to be your shutdown guy, is going to get you somewhere between 40 and 50 points a year and is going to be an integral piece in whatever you're building. Are you okay expending assets if that happens to be the floor as well? Because you can talk all you want about, okay, this guy looks like he could be a Bergeron or a Couturier. There's still a chance that that might even be too lofty. A lot of it's on development. A lot of it's on the player. But these are the styles and these are the sort of, I don't even want to call them expectations, because saying a guy is going to be the next Bergeron, like I don't, the next McDavid, the next Barkov,
right,
the next whatever, I don't like that. But stylistically, that's kind of who he matches up with. So if you feel comfortable in that guy being able to be a 1A or a pure number one sort of franchise type guy, then you're okay with doing it. But then there's a lot of pressure on that kid to deliver too.
Well, and I keep thinking about Utah in this conversation because, I mean, Utah is stacked when it comes to young, promising players going forward. And not to suggest they couldn't use another one, but Utah also, like, I wonder for a team that is now going to go into their second year of existence in a new city, they just kind of got the hockey gods gave them a gift when they won the second drawing and they moved from 14 to 4. So now all of a sudden they've got a first round pick that's a real asset. Not right to say 14th overall isn't, but now you got
the difference between
pick.
14 and 4 is significant, well, especially in terms of trade value.
Exactly. And what you can be demanding if you're going to move off that. And look, every single one of these teams that we mentioned, Chicago, Nashville, Utah, Frank even mentioned San Jose as potentially being open to moving their pick. Any one of those teams is going to be fine stepping up to the podium,
right,
and making their selection. Or maybe they don't step up to the podium. Maybe it's Gary Bettman who announces the pick.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. I have no idea how it's going to go this year because they've never done it like this before. I digress. My point is that Utah was kind of knocking on the door to be a playoff team this year. They finished 2 points behind where the Flames, or two spots behind where the Flames did, for instance. They were kind of in it right until almost the very end, and they're not rebuilding anymore. Like they would like to now be back in the playoffs. So if they could get an impact player and still get a first round pick and maybe get a prospect, but that impact player, all of a sudden you're starting to think to yourself, okay, maybe that's not as far-fetched as it would be in other years because of the circumstances. Like, the Islanders are going to make their pick. I don't think they're trading number one overall. And the ability to bring in a high-end defenseman like Schaefer to that organization, like, it just seems tailor-made. Utah, I don't know. It feels like that might be the type of team that you could put an enticing offer on the table for, and you're able to find a trade partner there.
Well, they've already got Gunther, Cooley, Keller, Sergachev. They just signed their two Russians that they drafted 2 years ago as well, so they'll be joining the organization. You just look at where they are and the type of noise they want to make inside their own market being a second-year team. All signs to me point to them doing whatever they can to be in that conversation when it's the mid-April and they're either a couple points in or a couple points out, but they've got that push going for them and generating that attention, generating that buzz, both from a city standpoint and an organizational standpoint. To me, that's a team that is going to basically do, whether it's at the draft, whether it's in free agency, whether it's at the trade deadline next year, that's a team that is shoving some chips in to be a playoff team come next spring.
Is Logan Cooley a number one center?
I think he will be.
He's coming off 75 points in 75 games.
I was going to say, he's almost a point per game player. I think he gets there. Like, if you were asking me, was he one this year? I don't think he's quite in that conversation, but he has the potential. What is he? You've got his stats up there right now. Is he even 23 yet?
He's not even 22.
Okay.
He just turned 21.
There we are. So he's got a little bit of developmental runway left.
When you think about Gunther and
Gunther's
Keller.
Gunther's going to be a 40-goal guy if he wasn't already this year.
Keller can still play.
Keller was the third highest scoring American in the NHL this past season.
Yeah.
And he was 11th in NHL scoring from four nations on.
And then you add in Simashev, and you add in
Daniil Boot.
Cooley, Boot, who they picked in the first round. They had two. And then Tija Ginla, who we've barely spoken about because he barely played this year.
Like, their foundation is set. They're almost in that Anaheim Ducks spot, maybe a little bit further along, where, okay, you've drafted a whole bunch of kids. You drafted high. You've seen some early returns on them. Keller's obviously got a little bit more runway than a Cooley or a Gunther, and obviously a Tej. But that now's the time for those teams in particular to be adding to round out their roster, because they're knocking on the door of being perennial playoff teams. So that's why Utah in particular makes sense to me. That's why Nashville in a different way makes sense, because they've already invested a lot in the group that they have and fell very, very short. And we heard a lot out of Nashville this season about changes or about, you know, if you're not going to perform. Well, if you have the number five pick, you've got a pretty big trade chip in terms of putting something out there in order to make sure you're not in the same situation you are a year from now.
Somebody suggested that they felt like maybe Frank was talking about when connecting the Flames to the conversation of the top five picks is maybe because basically what Frank said is scouts have told him that, you know, after a certain pick, you could get the same guy at 18 as you could at 35 type thing, if there'd be impetus for the Flames to maybe trade down from 18. And I don't know. I mean, that is always, we've seen it happen before with this organization. That wouldn't be a complete shock, but I do think the more the sexier conversation is the idea of them moving up.
Well, and to be perfectly honest, when I surf over to FC Hockey and I load our rankings page, I can see an argument where Jack Nesbitt, who we have at number 24, goes in and around that 16, 17, 18 mark, or a Jack Murtaugh, or Logan Hensler, Bill Zonin, who we aren't necessarily as high on as others. We've got him at 28, but I think he was third in Q scoring this year as a draft eligible, and he happens to be, what is it, 6'2", 6'4", somewhere in that range where, okay, here's a big guy that's proven he can produce. His boots are a question, but if you've got an organization that feels like they've got a good enough skating coach, he's a guy that shoots up some charts. So it's not out of the realm of possibility to lean into that. And you basically see it every year where once you get past a certain spot, an eyebrow or two may be raised when a guy comes off the board, but it's not so far a stretch as to think
right.
That no, 32 teams in the NHL, 32 very different lists.
We see it
rarely,
every year.
Rarely do you see a team with more than 90 players on their list. The draft is 224 picks long. That's how different and how much lists vary from
Flames,
team to team.
The Flames usually are like in the 50 to 60
right.
range, if I remember correctly.
So it's not out of the realm of possibility, too, if you've got four or five guys in your tier, you see a trade-down scenario
yep.
for the Flames.
This reads, to spend all the assets to move into the top five this year is a massive mistake. This says Rasmus Anderson and two first-round picks for pick four. Does that make any sense? So that would be your two firsts and Raz. I don't know if that's what Utah is looking at. I don't know if Rasmus Anderson is the guy that they'd be targeting. I understand why he'd be the guy that you end up thinking about, though, because of how his name has been tied to trade talks ever since the end of the season.
Yeah, well, let's look at it this way, is sort of the way that I frame it. Is hypothetically, if you were dealing Rasmus Anderson this summer, I'm of the firm belief that you're getting at least a first and probably a sweetener prospect on top of that. So suddenly now you're looking at dealing three firsts, 18, 31 or 32, and you're probably getting either a mid-teens or an early 20s-ish pick for Rasmus Anderson. That's a lot of first-round picks to move to five.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it right now, though. Like, they could use, I like Sean Durzi, but they could use a stalwart on the right side. Simashev's a left shot. Sergachev's a left shot. They could use a guy like Raz. If he'd be willing to sign.
I was going to say, then the flip side, too, is you got to send Raz to a place that he'd be willing to sign a long-term deal on to make that part work.
This says, what does it take? Raz in number 18 for a 4 or 5. That would allow them to take Higgins or Martone. Offensive game changers. I'm all in.
The problem on Martone, and I feel like I'm guilty of this for sleeping on him a little bit and talking to him and seeing him at the World Championship. Maybe wrongly so. We've got him at number 5. Yes, I did go to the World Championship. He's a winger, not a center.
That's
so I feel like that's not a move the Flames make to go draft a winger, even though I see shades of Rantanen in him. I know others see shades of Tkachuk or a Corey Perry in him as well. I just don't know if that's a move the Flames make unless there's a center there.
Yeah, if it's Higgins or Desnoyer, I think it's a different conversation. This says Anderson to Utah, along with one or both first round picks for fourth overall and a young left side D if they have one in the right age range. I don't know if you're going to be getting much else from Utah other than number 4 overall. JP says most of the top 5 draft teams already have their prospect cupboards full. Utah for sure. Maybe they want established NHL talent now to balance the youth. The Flames would need to package Anderson as their strongest trade asset plus, and they should. Flames need to deal from a position of strength, which clearly is right defense. What else we got here at 960? These ones aren't as on topic. Yeah, there you go. A lot of other hypothetical questions in there at 960. Hey, look. They need a center. And if they can, if they can find their way into the top 5 to get James Higgins or Desnoyer,
man, I like Desnoyer.
Then I think that's a really interesting conversation to be having. I really, really do. It's Steinberg and Vickers, and this is Flames Talk on a Wednesday. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.